I'm Leonard Lope. Welcome back to my show. HIV/AIDS is the leading cause of death among black women in the United States between the ages of 25 and 34. In sub-Saharan Africa, there are 13.5 million women living with the virus. A new play called In the Continuum puts a human face onto those grim statistics. And with me now are Nicole Salter and Danai Gurira, who star in the play, and they're also its writers. They've just finished a limited run at 59 East 59 Theater, and tomorrow they'll be performing again at the Perry Street Theater, which is on, as you probably guessed, Perry Street 31. I'm very pleased to welcome Ms. Gurira and Ms. Salter to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
You each play several different parts. Can you tell us about the main character you play? Danai, it's Abigail, the newscaster from Zimbabwe.
It is. Yes, she is a woman in her late 20s. Her name is Abigail Murambe, and she works at the Zimbabwean Broadcasting Corporation, where she is a newsreader. It's very kind of different from the concept of newscasting in America. It's a little less self-initiated, sort of journalistic. It's more you get handed what you read, and a very part-time type of gig. But she's a very proud woman. She has aspirations. She has goals. She foresees her future very brightly. And she has a pretty rocky situation going on with her marriage at that moment. But she is very, very, very optimistic about its future and has kind of decided what's going to happen next. She's also pregnant at the beginning of the show, which you find out in the first scene. She's ecstatic about that. And then it just goes from there.
And Nicole, your character, main character, is Nia, a 19-year-old inner-city girl from Los Angeles.
Nia James, yes. She's a lovely girl, although many people who experience her often may see something different. She's a girl with MTV dreams and BET video soul aspirations. She's within the child welfare system. She has issues with her home, her broken family. She is pregnant and hoping to marry a very prominent student athlete, a guy by the name of Darnell, who will no doubt be a great figure in college basketball and professional. And she's hoping to be a part of that as his wife at some point.
Well, these women live in very differently. Their lives are different. They live in different continents, different social contexts. And the United States and Africa are very different. Why juxtapose them in the same play? What do they have in common other than HIV?
I think the juxtaposition actually slapped Danai and I on the head, if you will, when we first created it. We weren't really sure what the juxtaposition actually meant or didn't do it with intention, but after people began to see the show and began to see the similarities and the differences between the African and the African American culture and in the humanity of the two women as they struggle for the to use the Jerry Maguire term, the quan of life, and that's something that's not just meaning to be juxtaposed between African and African American cultures, but in humanity at large, I think.
The irony is the socio-political, socio-cultural dynamics at play often do show parallels. And I think we had a vision of that being what it was, but we didn't go in there contriving it.
No.
It just sort of fell into place.
Well, weren't each of you working on a separate project, not knowing the other one was?
Well, we knew. What happened was during the third year of NYU's graduate acting program, you have a period of time called free play where you can do your own work, do whatever you want to do. And I knew that I wanted to do a one-woman show on AIDS and HIV as it related to African-American women. I assumed Danai wanted to do a show on women's issue as it related to Africa. And I think eventually I helped her to solidify that would be AIDS, HIV as well. And
Well, when did you decide to join forces?
Well, it was a very short amount of time. We both knew. She approached me because I'd been creating little pieces like this already, and she said, she just was like, "You're definitely going to do this for free play, right?" And I was like, "Yes." And she said the HIV/AIDS. I was looking at a myriad of issues, and I said, mm-hmm. "Yeah, I want to focus on that. That's a perfect thing." So we were going to do them back to back in one slot, mm-hmm. and that was like in December. So we knew we were going to work together. But then, just as we started to actually get to create the work, we got the time slot, which was in February. A teacher suggested to us we just put them on stage, put both stories on stage at the same time. Why put them back to back? Mm-hmm. And from there, we knew we were going to mesh the stories.
And did you think of yourselves as playwrights or as actors who were writing for yourselves?
I never thought. I still think of myself as an actor who's writing from a place of passion. There's an issue that I wanted to address. There are roles that I wanted to play. There's people's lives who I wanted to fill, and I hadn't read a piece of text that allowed me to step into it, so I created one.
Yeah, it was definitely a necessity of being the mother of invention moment for me, as I'd experienced in the past, just wanting to give contemporary African women a voice on a stage. I just couldn't find it, so mm-hmm. I had to do it.
Were you an eyewitness to the rise of HIV/AIDS when you were growing up in Zimbabwe?
I was indeed. I grew up there through the 80s and the 90s, and that's really where it started to kick into full illustration.
Would women contract HIV/AIDS in the same way in an African situation as in Los Angeles or New York or any other major American city?
When you say the same way...
In other words, in the case of Nia, she has dreams of marrying an up-and-coming athlete.
Mm-hmm.
What would Danai's situation with men be? And how culpable are men in both the situations?
Danai's situation?
I don't mean Danai's. I'm sorry. Abigail's. Forgive me.
Another story.
Well, we just
Danai's
learned something.
World.
No. It's not true.
Well, Abigail's situation is specifically she contracts it from her husband. And unfortunately, that's a phenomenon that is far too rampant in a lot of African communities. 80% of the women who have HIV, who are in long-term relationships such as marriages, have contracted it from their husbands. And that's an issue that it's very problematic, and it's something that I've witnessed a lot and I've found needs to have voice, because it's a very silent issue when a woman contracts it from her husband. And that was really and of course it can be contracted through through a boyfriend and all of that. All those different variables exist. But
well, what about the blame aspect of it?
The blame aspect in terms of
Well, you gave me this.
Yes, well, that's always the interesting thing, and that's always where you really feel the wedge, so to speak, between the African and the American perspective, because the concept is that there should be blame and revenge and such like things when such a thing is experienced. But the interesting phenomena that happens throughout a lot of African communities is that women do not respond that way to the situation. In fact, there's often an inversion of blame that goes towards the woman, even though it is the man who brought it to the home. And it's highly illogical and very frustrating, but it's what happens. And a lot of women feel they need to try and protect their status as a married woman through, because that's like a source of empowerment, and through actually catering towards the man, even in that sort of a situation.
Nicole, how conscious were you of AIDS in the community you were growing up with in Los Angeles?
I think that the first time I ever really gave it much thought was when Magic Johnson gave his press conference disclosing his diagnosis to the world. And at the time, I wasn't even sure exactly what it was or how he got it. I knew that it was bad and that he was going to die, like a horrible, like, in my mind, Ebola-like thing, like from Outbreak or something. Like, I didn't know what to think. I actually have had a life that was very touched by HIV and AIDS, but not in the same kind of direct illustrative way that Danai maybe has experienced in her life. Because of denial, because of silence, because of stigma in the African American community, there are many people, given the statistics, with AIDS and HIV, but you don't get to hear their voice or actually see them. I have an uncle who died of AIDS, and I was told that he died of a parasite when I was younger. And to protect my family, I mean, they just wanted to protect my feelings and they didn't want to keep me from all of that trauma. But that's a thing that's very common.
Well, in this country, most people would think of AIDS as something that affects men. They don't think about
which is another
the
thing
effect
that,
on women.
Which is the reason why we created this play. I mean, African American women or women in general, their cases of new HIV, the new HIV diagnosis and new cases of AIDS amongst women are skyrocketing as far as I'm concerned.
Do you have any idea why in, I think the statistics I read from 2003, the rate of
exactly.
new AIDS cases for black women was 20 times that of white women,
exactly.
five times greater than the infection rate for Latinas, that's according to a report by the mm-hmm. CDC. Is there something that's happening in the African-American community?
Wow, what a loaded question.
Well, it's still a question that has to be asked.
Exactly. No. I'm willing to address it. I by no means have the answer, but I have been delving into some of the reasons that might be. There's the whole quote-unquote down-low phenomenon that is being addressed so widely in the public view. There's also the issue of African-American men being incarcerated, especially on drug charges, and return to their communities relatively soon in the grand scheme of being incarcerated, you know, 1, 3, 5 years in prison. The fact that there aren't condoms used in prisons and that the stigma of a man having sex with another man is still very, it just dominates the minds of so many families as being a horrible thing still. And I'm not going to pass judgment on whatever that is, but what it does is it prevents people from living authentic lives. And anything that prevents a person from living authentic lives leads to lies, leads to secrets, and leads to things that grow in the dark.
Danai, do you think that the Zimbabwe government of Robert Mugabe is taking enough action?
I'm not going to delve too deeply into that topic.
Well, the only reason that I ask is because, you know, that this is a country that has so many other problems, economic and political. Would HIV/AIDS take a back seat just simply because of all the other issues that have to be dealt with?
Ironically, and I'm going to leave that word hanging in the air with weight, ironically, the Mugabe government actually has been showing a lot of interest towards this issue. And actually, they've been a lot of the key figures in the government do talk about the issue and make people face up that it's a serious problem. And they actually do say, you know, we all have relatives who've died of it. We know what it looks like. We have to deal with it. And there is an issue. There is like even an AIDS levy tax, which I'm not quite sure where that money goes, but it exists as an AIDS levy, which is supposed to help support moving us through this problem effectively in a sense.
You said before, both of you, that you think of yourself as actors first, and the two of you are the only performers in this play. You play other characters, not just Nia and Abigail, mm-hmm. witch doctors, parents, a guidance counselor, a nurse, with just a minimum of props, scarves and shawls, I guess, your main props. The stage is about as bare as is possible. So it really is a lot about acting, isn't it? It's suddenly changing from one character to another, in some cases under very emotional conditions.
Well, we just, you know, it's like it's about. Well, it's about us believing in the world.
Well, that explains a lot.
It's about us believing in the world and taking you there. We have an acting teacher who once said, you know, if you believe in it, I will follow you wherever you take me.
And the audience wants to follow.
And they want to follow. Mm-hmm. And we do see the worlds that we're. I looked at it and I said, when I started creating things where I was creating many different characters in a story, I was like, well, firstly, there's no one else here but me who knows this world. I'm the only one who knows Zimbabwe this well around me. And secondly, you know, I can see it and I can play with it. And so I hope that they can follow me. And thankfully, we're in a school where people affirmed that it was working.
But I also think that it's actually within the text. I don't want to make our play seem like a tour de force of performance.
Yeah.
The humor in the piece, the issues that we address in the piece is very much in the text. And Danai and I actually look forward to seeing other people perform it.
Oh, very much so.
It also could be done with a larger cast.
Exactly.
It could be.
Absolutely. So it's quite a fun time. It's not a drag. I know the issue is serious and is weighty and deserves our attention in that way. Mm-hmm. But it's also drenched with the humor of life, I would say, not, you know, slapstick.
And a reminder that in the continuum moves from the 59 East 59 Theater tomorrow to the Perry Street Theater at 31 Perry Street. It'll be running through January 14th. For tickets, call 212-868-4444. My great thanks to its writers and its actors, Nicole Salter and Danai Gurira, for being my guests today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.